Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast. The Saturday podcast, as always, is brought to you by our friends at Iowa Pork. On the 4th of July, my neighbor Scott, he threw some ribs in his smoker out on his back patio, and let me tell you, they were absolutely delicious, and they were 100% Iowa Pork from the Iowa Pork Producers, the presenting sponsor of the Cyclone Fanatic Saturday podcast each and every week. What's the weather supposed to be like this weekend?
Sunny, I think.
Oh,
sunny.
Hey, it's going to be a beautiful weekend for some pork. Throw it on the grill. Throw it in your slow cooker. Throw it in the smoker. It doesn't matter. Regardless of what your preferred method of cooking is, pork is always a great option. And that is, of course, if it comes from our friends at Iowa Pork. That other voice you heard, of course, Austin Hurst. What's up, brother?
What's going on, man?
It's been a few weeks. Continuing your run as a you're basically the third host of the Saturday podcast.
I like it.
Yeah. Summer League starts. Well, by the time this comes out, I guess it will have already started. I guess it has already started. I'm just all confused.
Vegas will have started.
I always try and do this stuff where I'm like, we're recording the Saturday podcast, and I want to, you know, create the illusion that we're recording this like at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday.
That we're actually working hard on Saturday.
Yeah, in reality, it's, you know, 4:30 on Friday afternoon, and I'm trying to – I get myself all confused because I want to act like it's Saturday. But yep. The Summer League, regardless, is underway. A pair of Iowa State players already have played in a few games during the Utah Summer League that wrapped up Thursday night. Two more set to play in the Vegas Summer League. That's how we're going to start today's podcast, talk a little bit about their chances, you know, what their outlook is like here moving forward over the next several months of their professional career coming out of this Summer League. And I figured we'd kind of just start with the guy who probably – okay, I think there's probably two guys who are closest to cracking into an NBA rotation. But first, I want to start with George Niang. Today, he was named one of the standouts of the Utah Summer League, averaged 16.7 points, 5 rebounds, a couple assists, was the fourth leading scorer in that league. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see with George what the Jazz want to do with him. He goes into year two on that two-way contract. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they gave him a qualifying offer to bring him back to Utah. But I'm just not sure where they see him fitting into that team. I don't know Utah's roster really well enough to make like a, you know, sweeping prediction or anything like that. But I know that they're not probably overly deep in those forward positions. I could see him playing a kind of a – and if you think that I'm completely wrong on this, you know, tell me. What about like a Joe Ingles role? I know Joe Ingles is set to get paid here in the next year or two. Maybe they're just grooming him to kind of be that replacement.
Yeah, I think Utah is actually a really interesting situation for him, just with the way that Quinn Snyder, for those, you know, who have watched the NBA and watched the way that Utah plays, they play a little bit more unique than a lot of other teams. And I think that George is a guy that could really fit in with what they like to do. And, yeah, you know, like if it's a Joe Ingles type role or even just Utah likes to run a lot of screen and roll, and we've seen that a lot in the Summer League, and that's obviously something that George is really good at. He's very intelligent, and he can move his feet well, and he's just a very, very smart basketball player, which kind of fits into that mold. So, yeah, I don't know if they, you know, want to try to replace him with Joe, like fill him into a Joe
Ingles
role.
Yeah, I was just using that as kind of an example.
Right, yeah. They, they're kind of another team, too, that obviously they've got Gobert at the five, but they really do play a fair amount of, you know, positionless basketball, and George is one of those guys that just can kind of find his way in by,
right,
you know, making shots off the bench and, you know, being good in screen and roll. And obviously the defensive end is going to be an end where he has to prove himself. You know, everybody knows that he can score the ball. It's just whether or not he'll be able to defend at an NBA level. And, you know, that's the thing that I think is, you know, probably holding him back the most. But
see, and that's the thing last night when I was watching him play in that game against the Atlanta Hawks, which obviously this is the Summer League. These are not guys who are, you know, there's a few guys who obviously will be playing in the NBA next year, but most of them are not. And he does look considerably improved just as an on-ball defender. Just in the way his foot speed has gotten better, his lateral quickness, I think, is better over these last couple years. It was interesting to me, actually, last night watching him. He looks more like he did as a sophomore and junior than he did when he was a senior. But it's not like, before he was kind of chubby. Now he's just, thick. Like, he's just a big dude.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's something that if he can maintain that speed and the lateral quickness that he's gained, then – maybe he can be a good enough defender to come in and, not be a starter or anything like that, but come in, play 10, 15 minutes, be lethal on the pick and pop, get him on the block a little bit, working on his, the old man game that we've known that he loves to utilize all the way back to Iowa State. So I think that whether it's with Utah, whether it's with someone else, there's going to be a role for him to play in the NBA. And I don't think his pursuit of playing in the NBA is going to end in the, near future or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I think George is going to be a guy that is going to play in the NBA.
And I think you saw people last night even saying, this dude is an NBA player.
Yeah, and, a lot of that is, George had an incredible year in the G League, and it's just a league right now that doesn't get a lot of notoriety. It's not real popular yet. It's kind of gaining momentum towards that as – all the 30 teams start to get their own G League affiliates, yeah, which is going to help a lot. And then, the TV money and all that stuff, when that stuff starts getting pumped into the league, I think this is going to be, a lot more. They're going to be able to keep a lot of these guys from going to Europe because they're going to be able to pay them a good amount of money and give them, a better chance in theory of making the NBA.
See, and that's a guy like I think about George, who, coming out of college, obviously was someone that everybody looked at, and it's like he has the potential to play at that NBA level. But he's just going to take some time to develop. And in the past, some of those guys might look at that and be like, well, I don't really want to waste time making $35,000 a year or whatever it was that they're, I think that the minimum salary in the G League at one point was like $15,000 a year or something like that, which, obviously, there's some dudes in that league that they just, go to tryouts and all of a sudden they're on the team.
Yep.
But I think back to a situation maybe like a Chris Babb, where if he is coming out of Iowa State now in 2018, he might be a little bit more patient in sticking in the G League and spending some time there and just allowing himself to develop a little bit in a system to where maybe then he would earn an opportunity to be in the NBA. Rather than what he was only in the G League, I think, for 1 year before he ended up jumping to
Europe. One or two he played with me.
Yeah,
yep.
And those guys make good enough money now where you can, it's viable to say, okay, I'll play however long in the G League, and if it doesn't work out after, 2, 3, 4 years or whatever, I'll go to Europe. And if George made the decision to go to Europe, that dude would definitely be probably one of the highest paid American players in any of those leagues because of the talent that he brings and the uniqueness that he brings to the floor.
Oh yeah, no question. The G League, with the two-way contract now, that's definitely huge. That's helped keep a lot of guys over here that normally, like you said, would have left because the money wouldn't have been there. Now with the two-way, you can spend 45 days in the NBA, which is the equivalent of 45 games, and you get the prorated, NBA minimum salary compared to the G League salary. So
yeah, if you're on one of those two-way contracts, I was doing the math one day. If you spend the max number of days in the in the NBA, you make something like $150,000 or something.
Yeah, which most that are on two ways do. I mean, whether they're getting minutes in an NBA game is a different story, but most of them do spend the 45 days in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's just a lot better money wise than it was in the past, just for the regular G League contracts. And George is definitely a guy that has definitely played very well in the G League, and he's honestly right now on Curtis Stinson level. He's just right there, easily one of the best players in the G League. Just
right.
Hasn't found the right situation
exactly
yet, or just, he's right there. And the thing for George too is he's still really young. Mm-hmm. And He's going to get his shot.
See, and that's the thing for him, where if Utah decided that they wanted to let him go, which I don't think that they will, based on some of the comments by their general manager, Dennis Lindsay, last night during the broadcast of the game, if they did make the decision that they wanted to let him go, it would not take very long for a team to pick him up on another two-way, I don't think. I mean, I like you said, he's like right there, if you're looking at kind of the hierarchy of how this thing works, he's probably in that top tier of guys that are just like just below getting a guaranteed contract in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for those familiar that listen, that watch a lot of NBA, I mean, he's really right in like Quinn Cook territory right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, and Quinn Cook is on a deal with the Warriors, and he's right there. So whether it's, you know, with Utah or with another organization, he's going to get an opportunity. And I mean, I would expect him in the next, you know, at least two seasons, he'll be a full-time bench player in the NBA.
I think that league too is going to continue to gain notoriety as we've seen more and more players come out and have success in the NBA.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That's really the big thing that they need in order for it to blow up to the level that they think it can. Is you need to see guys go into that league and then develop and then go on and actually play.
Yeah.
And if they're able to do that, then you know that more and more people are going to follow it, more and more people are going to care, especially the guys, or, you know, the people that are fans of these teams that want to follow the particular team.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's just, you know, kind of even looking at like what Lindell Wigginton said when he made his decision to come back to school, how, you know, he didn't want to play in the G League. That's just kind of where we're at right now. The stigma of the G League is, you know, it's kind of looked at as a bad thing. But I think as we get farther down the line and there's more money pumped into it, I think it's going to end up being, you know, looked at as major positive, because instead of, you know, guys like George or even, you know, other guys like second round picks that teams take, instead of just stashing them at the end of the bench to keep them on their roster, they can just send them down to the G League and they're playing, you know, live games instead of just practicing and sitting on the end of the bench. I mean, that's going to be way more beneficial for them. So I think, like you said, the farther we go along and, you know, the TV money and the salary cap bump and everything and the more money that gets thrown into the G League, I think it's going to be better long term.
Another guy that league has been really beneficial for so far, and he's in a similar situation, I think. Man, sorry guys, I've got my roommate's dog just joined us here about a week and a half ago, and he is very vocal. His name is Todd Malamute, and he if you stop petting him, he's going to let you know that it's not time to stop petting him. But and that's Monte Morris. I mean, he's on a two-way contract with the Denver Nuggets. And going into this next year, he's going to be in a position where he's very seriously going to be battling for that backup point guard spot in Denver. And he's another guy that played really well in his first year in the G League, played in, I think, three games for the Nuggets last season. And if he can come out during this summer league and continue to prove that he can play at a high level, I would not be at all surprised to see him on the full Nuggets roster on opening night, honestly, because I think that he is that close, you know, and the situation there in Denver, I think, shapes up pretty well for him to battle to be in that position as a rotational guy.
Yeah, no, 100%, because right now with the cap, Denver's kind of landlocked. They don't have a lot of room to go. So especially, you know, this is a huge summer league for Monte, because if he's able to go out there and, you know, show that he can run the team and, you know, they get a look at him and then he get, you know, they get into training camp and he's a guy that's right there that shows, you know, he can be like point guard off the bench and, you know, run the offense. He's going to be a very cheap backup point guard, mm-hmm. which is something very, very valuable for a team that is just landlocked right now by the cap. So he's in a very good situation right now with their cap space.
Well, especially I think the thing that makes him so appealing is that with backup point guards, you don't need them to be a guy who's going to come in and give you 20 points or give you 15 points or anything like that. You need him to be a guy that's good enough to keep things from falling apart when the starter comes off the floor.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I mean, the backup point guard is huge in the NBA just because the amount of minutes that the starters play during the regular season is really not a lot. So if you just have a terrible bench, it doesn't really matter how good your starters are. You know, there's going to be a significant drop-off, and, you know, by the end of the game, your starters are going to have to be playing more minutes. So, well,
especially with a team like Denver that I think they've got playoff aspirations now, where you need a guy who can be that backup point guard who will come in and, you know, spell guys like Jamal Murray. And is Jameer Nelson still on that team?
I think Gary Harris.
Okay, Gary Harris. Yeah, I mean, I know they want to play Jamal Murray at the point,
yep,
primarily, but yeah, I mean, he's just, we know from his time playing at Iowa State that it's gonna be pretty tough to get him flustered, you know. And like I said, he's probably not gonna be a guy that comes in and gives you 20 points night in, night out. Will he have some nights where he plays really well offensively? Of course, you know, he's got that kind of talent, but he's gonna be a guy who comes in there, takes care of the basketball, defends hard, and looks to get guys open shots. And if you can do that, then, you know, you've got staying power in the league.
Yeah, and, you know, going along with Monte, it's the same thing with George. You know, both of those guys are giving themselves a shot, too, because they're not going to be a problem in the locker room.
Yeah.
They're great teammates. They're going to buy into their role. They're going to do whatever they can to help the team win. And that's going to help both of those guys, give them a good chance. You know, there's no ego there. Mm-hmm. I mean, Monte Morris, we watched it for 4 years in Ames. He's going to make the right play. And that's what you can count on from him, and that's what Denver is going to count on from him. He's not a guy that needs to go get his. You know, like you said, he's going to have nights where he scores the ball well, but, you know, overall, he's just going to be a guy that you can count on. And really, in the NBA, for a backup point guard, that's huge, just knowing what you can get out of him every single night.
Yeah. The guy who I think honestly probably has the most – jeez. My goodness, Todd. The guy who probably has the most intriguing, you know, kind of future here over the next several months is Naz Meacher-Long, because I think he's in kind of an interesting position. He's been on a two-way with Utah, has you know, played some games in the NBA last season, or at least one game in the NBA last season, and, you know, goes back to just being a full-time G League guy. If I don't know what his future is. Ooh. At this point. Like, he's got... He's got the most interesting – I don't know. Man, Todd's got me all off my train of thought. He has the guy who is most uncertain, I think, like coming out of this summer league. Is he going to sign another G League deal, or is someone going to give him a two-way contract? And that's where things are up in the air for him, where if he can impress during this – you know, he played well in Utah. If he can play well again in Vegas, you know, maybe someone will bring him in to a training camp. Or maybe Utah will even bring him into a training camp. And if he can land himself on a two-way, he's another guy that I think that's going to have a chance.
Yeah.
You know? But it comes down to finding someone to give you a chance, and he's got to, you know, perform well in the opportunities that he gets, which is what this couple weeks is going to be for him.
Right. Yeah, I mean, obviously this league is all about fit. And, you know, there's a lot of guys who have just never made it that were good enough just because they never got the right opportunity. And then there's guys that, you know, ended up landing in the right opportunity. And, you know, kind of like Draymond Green, if David Lee never gets hurt for the Warriors and, you know, they don't have to plug him in.
Or if he never even is on the Warriors.
Right.
You know.
You know, we might never see Draymond Green playing at this level.
Well, think if Kawhi Leonard, like that kind of guy, he never gets traded to San Antonio. Like, he probably doesn't become the player that he is now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, it's completely about fit. I mean, a guy like Naz also, you know, he's a guy as well that you know what he's going to bring to the table. I mean, he's going to be a great teammate. He's gonna take care of the ball. He's gonna make some shots, and he's always gonna play defense. So, he's a guy that's gonna give himself a chance as well. And he's definitely gonna get a camp invite, I'm guessing. From there, it'll be interesting to see what happens if, you know, he does get picked up for another two-way, or if he just kind of has to play another year in the G League, or if he decides to, you know, go overseas and kind of have a bigger role.
And if he does that, he'll make good money. He'll be a high demand guy.
Yeah.
Going that route.
Yeah, you know, it's all about fit, and it's all about what, you know, what you're looking for in your career. I mean, there's a lot of guys who have been good enough to, you know, I mean, look for example, a guy like Matt Thomas.
I was going to bring him up.
He's a guy that's he's easily good enough to be.
He proved it last year.
You know, a two-way guy in the G League. You know, he had a great summer league. You know, he could be honestly an end of the bench NBA guy at you know, or even a potential role player.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not a lot of minutes, but that would be like his peak. But you know, with the role that he has in Europe on his team right now, and you know, wherever he goes in the future, like he's gonna have a bigger role, and he's gonna make a lot of money, and he's gonna be playing in a great league. So, you know, it's all kind of what you look for in your career, and I think that Europe just kind of gets this bad stigma at times. You know, guys that go over to Europe, they're like, oh, they weren't good enough to make the NBA. Well, that's not necessarily true. A lot of guys that play over there, you know, especially in like Spain,
Well, I mean, I mentioned, like, Chris Babb.
Right,
he's good
right.
to play in the NBA.
Yeah,
Will Clyburn, I think, is a guy who's been good enough.
I mean,
yeah.
DeAndre Kane is a guy. I mean, his age always held him back, but he's right there, I believe. Last time I checked, he was playing for Maccabi Tel Aviv, which is one of the best teams in Europe. So, you know, that
I mean, even Tyrus McGee, who was – I know, was a good college player, but he's by no means was a guy that everybody looked at and it's like, that dude's a bona fide NBA player. But he does something so well that he continues to get these looks from NBA teams year after year. I mean, I think this is probably maybe the first or only second year he might have been on a team last year where he was on summer league teams every year, getting camp invites.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And he never really played in the G League or anything like that. It was just like every year it popped up and it's like, oh, Tyrus is on another team.
Right. And I mean, you know, for those who follow the NBA pretty closely, Mike James is a guy who played in Greece for a long time, came over and played in the summer league, and he ended up getting a two-way from Phoenix, ended up playing a lot, got a contract. For some reason, they released him after they signed him to the contract. I don't really understand that at all, but, you know, he's just another guy that just was a great player in Europe, decided to come over, played in the NBA. You know, he was definitely good enough, and he was starting games for Phoenix. I mean, obviously they were a bottom feeder, but you know, he was a starting NBA point guard for a while. You know, yeah, it's all about what you look for in your career, and you know, a lot of those former Iowa State guys, you know, Matt Thomas, Will Clyburn, Tyrus McGee, Chris Babb, DeAndre Kane, you know, all of those guys are having
Melvin Ejim,
you know, the list goes on. They're having great careers overseas, and I think they've just kind of gotten to, you know, a comfort of, all right, I'm making my money. You know, Dustin Hogue's another one. He's having a great career overseas. You know, those guys are having great careers.
If you're making money, you've got a good life, and you're living in a cool part of the world, why risk it?
Exactly. Why risk coming back and being an end-of-the-bench guy in the NBA or, you know, kind of trying to claw your way in the G League and, you know, having that uncertainty, whereas, you know, a lot of those guys are – probably the go-to guy on their team in Europe. So, yeah, it's just – I think Europe just sometimes kind of gets a bad stigma and just, you know, I think the – I mean, obviously we've seen those guys play, but there's a lot of guys in Europe that are talented enough to play over here. And it's just kind of what you look for and what you want in your career.
Yeah, last guy, former Iowa Stater playing in the summer league this year – is Deontay Burton. I'm going to be honest, I was a little surprised that he came back and played in the league again because, honestly, he didn't play very well last year in his opportunity. And I don't know if that's maybe what he's looking at where he's like, I didn't play well last year. I didn't put my best foot forward going into, you know, what eventually he goes on to Korea and is the MVP of the Korean Basketball League and had a tremendous rookie season. I don't know if that's what the situation is where he just looks at it and he's like, hey, you know, why not give it one more shot? I didn't put my best foot forward last year. Or if he has a legitimate shot at maybe making it into the NBA. I don't know. I think he's got the talent to do it, but I just don't know that we've seen it yet at that level. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think in terms of playing in the summer league, I'm guessing – I believe he played for Minnesota's summer league last year.
And they were just awful.
And they weren't good. Yeah. And he was a guy who did not play a lot. And when he played, he was not very good. My guess as to why he is playing in the summer league this year would be his agent got him on a team to where he's going to play a good amount of minutes and get a chance to show what he can do. Whereas, you know, he was coming out of college last year – you know, probably kind of took the first opportunity that they could get.
Some young guys too,
right,
that they were really trying to work
right,
with.
Right, exactly. You know, it was all about, you know, situation like Matt Thomas. He had a great summer league. You know, those first couple games, he was hardly playing. And in the minimum amount of time he played, he was playing well. And then as, you know, it went on, like we were talking about off air, you know, Lonzo got hurt. They started, you know, Ingram played one game. They started resting guys. You know, Matt got his chance, and then he started playing a lot. Whereas I think if Deontay would have came in and played well right away, that same thing might have happened to him. So in terms of him playing in the summer league, I'm guessing that his agent thinks that they have a better opportunity for him this year. And, yeah, I mean, you know, he's a guy that – he doesn't have a lot to lose. I mean, he had a great year in Korea, and you know, I don't know what his aspirations are for his career, but I think, you know, he wants to come over here and he wants to show that, like you said, he's a lot better than he was last year in the Summer League.
All right, quickly wrapping up the Summer League conversation here on the Saturday podcast presented by Iowa Pork. Who's the guy you're most excited to see over the next couple weeks?
Oh, in the Summer League? Being a Bulls fan, I'm excited to see both of their first-round guys, Wendell Carter Jr. and Chandler Hutchison. In terms of just anybody, I'm really excited to see Jaren Jackson a little more. You know, he was kind of a guy that I watched.
He way outplayed Begley.
Yeah.
Begley was awful during his Utah
League. Speaking of the Kings, the number one guy that I'm looking forward to see play more is Harry Giles.
Yeah.
He was kind of a guy that they took a shot in the dark with last year. You know, I think they drafted him around number 20. He was a kid who was really hyped up out of high school.
He's number one recruit in the country, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you know, was never healthy at Duke. Sat out the entire year last year. They're saying he's healthy now. So, yeah, he's a guy that I'm really interested to see. I know he's played a couple games already, but I'm excited to see him out in Vegas and see how he looks and if he looks healthy and if he's going to be a guy who can contribute. What about you?
We were talking about this off air, and I wrote about this as well. Luka Doncic, obviously, with Dallas. I know that there's some questions as to how much he's actually going to play in the league just because of how long he played in the EuroLeague before being drafted. He's one. Wendell Carter's up there for me. And then I want to see Zaire Smith, you know, with the Sixers. I mean, that's a guy that they're betting a lot on to be somebody that they think can fit into their core. And, I mean, he's got the talent. He's got the athleticism to be a really nice player. But I'm excited to see him against some of these guys that are, you know, at just another notch up from what he saw playing in the Big 12. When we come back here on the Saturday podcast, we'll talk a little bit about you know, what else has been happening here during the NBA offseason, maybe some final thoughts on what it happened with the NBA draft, and of course the big move in the NBA, that's Lance Stephenson joining the Los Angeles Lakers.
And JaVale McGee.
And Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, big moves.
Oh, and some guy named LeBron James too. Yeah. We'll be right back here on the Saturday podcast presented by Iowa Pork.
Hello, friends. We'll get you back to the Psycho and Fanatic podcast here in just a minute. This is Chris Williams, and I want to tell you guys about a great experience I recently had. Mine was up at Ames Eye Clinic. Now, the same guys, Dr. Kruger and the crew, are also down in Des Moines, so we've got a lot of options for you here. But I had lunch with Dr. Kruger, and I was telling him about some of the symptoms that I had had. I was having headaches all the time. I felt like I needed in the back of my neck. It was weird. It was like stiff all the time. I noticed, you know, I was having problems reading up close. It was weird. Went in, had my eyes checked, and sure enough, I had some issues going on that I never even thought of. I never had to wear glasses as a kid. You get a little bit older. They hooked me up with some glasses that I use now when I'm looking at my computer screen all day working here at Cyclone Fanatic. Headaches have not completely gone away, but they've gotten a lot better. If you're like me, you probably haven't had your eyes checked in years. It had been over a decade since I had. Really glad that I went in there. Most insurance, it's going to work because they can code it, that it's health. There's a lot of different things that can happen with that. I'd love for you guys to give them a shot. Ames Eye Clinic. It's up on 10th Street. If you are in Des Moines, it's over on 2600 Grand Avenue. They will hook you up. Awesome guys. They're big Cyclone fans and proud supporters of CycloneFanatic.com, and they've helped me a lot. All right, here back today to our newest installment of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast.
Welcome back to the Saturday podcast presented by Iowa Pork. During the break there, it was a little bit longer than what the actual break in the podcast will be, but we learned that Jarrell Brock, running back from Quincy, Illinois, a four-star recruit, is going to be a Cyclone. It's a big-time get.
Yeah. When's football starting? That's the real question.
Yeah. See, that's kind of what you said is like, the fact that you and I are sitting here in July watching running backs announce their commitments on Quincy, Illinois television goes to show how much, you know, more excitement there is to have about Iowa State football, I would say.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. It's hard not to be excited after last year, you know, and just the momentum and, you know, that the staff has on the recruiting trail right now. It's exciting. It's an exciting time to be an Iowa State fan just overall.
Yeah. Obviously, we'll have a lot more time to talk about Brock coming to Iowa State here in the next several months, but just wanted to mention that here while we're sitting here and, you know, we're going to record a podcast, might as well give some quick thoughts on it. But that definitely puts Iowa State, you know, in the conversation for having one of the best running back classes in, you know, probably in the country for the class of 2019 alongside Breece Hall. And the two guys combined to rush for more than 3,500 yards and 50 touchdowns as juniors. So I would say that Iowa State is getting two guys who know how to run the football, have run the football effectively at the high school level, and it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to be able to do in Ames here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, what a get for Nate Shieldhouse, you know, just right off the bat. Obviously, you know, a lot of people were worried about losing Lou Ieni. You know, he did a great job recruiting, bringing in, you know, Kenne and David Montgomery. And, you know, on paper, this kid's the real deal. So, great get for him. Congrats to him. Congrats to the staff. And, you know, just looking forward to them. Keep it rolling.
Everybody out there can crack a beer and celebrate in the name of a kid who won't be able to probably drink for like four more years.
Yeah, I'll do it for him, though.
So there we go. Oh, I know you will. All right, let's talk about back to the NBA here. We'll wrap this up. I know that you and I could probably do like a two-hour podcast if we wanted to. We were doing the first part of that, and I think that our original intention was to do like 15 minutes, and then I looked down and we talked about George Niang for 10. And I was like, oh, yeah, we're not cutting this to 15 minutes. But, all right, I mean, first of all, obviously there's a natural starting point. LeBron James is headed to Los Angeles. Like I mentioned before the break, Lance Stephenson, Rajon Rondo, JaVale McGee have all already agreed to join him there. I'm interested to know what you think about how this is starting to come together. And I think because actually my opinion has changed since the initial signings were announced.
Well, my first take on it after, you know, the first couple signings were announced, after obviously LeBron signed and, you know, they made the moves that they've made, is LeBron is not super enticed at winning right now. It's not a top priority to him. Mm-hmm. That's the way that I look at it, you know, being that he signed a four-year deal, something that he never did in Cleveland when he went back. You know, that to
something
me...
Something I don't think he ever even did in Miami.
I don't think he did. And just kind of the guys they're bringing in right now, and, you know, obviously just per Woj and other guys around the league, they're not... The Lakers aren't making a huge push to trade for Kawhi right now. To me, that just tells me that LeBron is, you know, not... He's not needing something done right now. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if, you know, they kind of wait out Kawhi and just kind of hold the hope that they can get him there in summer 19. And LeBron just kind of plays with these younger guys and meshes with them. And, you know, because LeBron's a smart guy. He knows that the Warriors have a leg up on him, no matter pretty much what he does. Even if Kawhi comes in, by the time you bring in Kawhi, the assets that are going out, you know, he's still going to be a step or two behind the Warriors. So, takeaways that I had from LeBron signing with the Lakers, I was not very surprised. What I was surprised by was he did give him a four-year deal. Mm-hmm. That did surprise me. That shows.
I was surprised as much as anything by the way that he did it.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really not expecting it to come on July 1st, July 2nd, whatever it ended up being. I think it was July 1st.
Yeah, it was the first.
Yeah, yep. Where he had... And, you know, all the other two times had been, you know, the letter, obviously, when he goes back to Cleveland is not a huge production. But, I mean, to have Lee Jenkins write something for you that is announcing what you're going to go do, I mean, that's obviously a pretty big deal. And then, obviously, the decision was a whole blown-out deal. And for them to just be like, he's going to Los Angeles. Clutch Sports put out a press release, and that was it. And that's just how it happened. And I think that shows the maturation of LeBron's career to an extent. I was expecting them to do something for Uninterrupted where they do this whole big documentary and all kinds of stuff where it's like, you know, he's going through all this big process. And in reality, he's just like, I know where I'm going. I'm going to go there. And that's it.
Yeah, and I think obviously the reaction from Cleveland fans.
Much more subdued.
Right. There's no way to tell definitively what would have happened if he would have announced it the other way, any other way. But with the way that he announced it, I pretty much saw nothing but praise from Cleveland fans, you know, just saying.
And I think, too, it's different from the last time. It's a lot harder for them to criticize him.
Yeah.
I mean, he came back and did everything that he told him he was going to do.
Yep.
You know, he told him he was going to bring him a championship. He did. He brought them probably the most memorable sports moment that they, of anybody from the city of Cleveland, has ever had.
Yeah.
At least positive one.
Yeah.
He took him to the finals 3 more times.
Yep.
It is hard for anybody from that city, anybody in that fan base, to complain about anything that LeBron did in the 4 years that he was back there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to be too bitter about him leaving.
Yeah. He took a team, you know, into Oakland and won an NBA championship in Game 7 on the road, had 28-11-11 mm-hmm. Against a 73-win team, an all-time great team. No, there's
one of the, and it's not only is it one of the all-time great Cleveland sports moments, that block on Andre Iguodala is one of the most memorable sports moments of my lifetime.
Oh,
I mean, just I remember it so vividly, you know, where I was sitting in my apartment in Ames, who I was sitting there with,
yep.
how we reacted, and just, you know, how you could see the whole thing developing where he runs into the frame, and it's just like, you kind of have this moment where you're like, holy, he's about to block this.
Yeah.
And then he takes like 2 steps, rises up, and blocks it. I mean, it's that, if I did like a power ranking of my favorite sports moments of my lifetime, that would be right near the top. It's the only one that I've got on my wall out in the living room.
Yeah.
I mean, so like that's the kind of thing that, like I said, if you're from Cleveland, you can't complain about him leaving. It's just what he wanted to do.
He brought a championship back to Cleveland. And, you know, the beautiful thing about, you know, sport and even just in life, you know, I think a lot of people don't think about it, you know, in life. It's like, you know, you're at a job and you are great at your job and you get offered by a different company that, you know, might have something more enticing for you. Well, just because you're from where you're working at this job, you can't leave for the other one. I mean, that's what I think gets looked at a lot. And in the NBA, you know, you're an unrestricted free agent. You know, you have the right to do whatever you want to do. You've earned that right. And, you know, because when you're drafted and when you're a restricted free agent, you know, you're under like, you know, 7-8 years of team control.
Yeah.
And you paid your time, you played there. And after that, you have the right to do whatever you want. And, you know, I know you feel differently about Kevin Durant than yeah. I do. I don't absolutely kill the guy. You know, he made a decision that he wanted to do.
That's just and that has nothing to – I respect fully his decision to leave. He could have gone anywhere else, and I would have been 100% behind him. If he goes home to Washington or if he goes to – even if he goes to the Lakers, whatever. Like, if that's what he wanted to do, I would have been cool with it. But it's the thing that made me mad about it is the – being the second best player in the world,
the competitive nature of
having the 73 win team that, you know, LeBron eventually beat, but having them on the ropes in the Western Conference Finals where you're up 3-1 and a game away from going to the NBA Finals, to go and join that team to me was just like that it's the competitive nature of it where I look at it and I'm like, man, if I'm a competitor, I look at that and I want to beat those guys. Like, how close were we to beating them? Why would I want to go be with them?
Yeah.
You know? Like, I'd be pissed at all of them. I'd be like, no, I hate you guys. Like, you guys just came back and ruined the moment of my career that was going to be that moment, you know?
Yeah.
If he beats that team in the Western Conference Finals, that Thunder team, whether or not they beat the Thunder or the Cavs in the Finals, they're remembered forever.
Yeah.
For beating that 73-win Warriors
yep.
team. And instead, they're remembered for blowing that series and then Kevin Durant going and joining the team that they blew the series to. So that justifying what I, yeah.
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 No,
that,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
how, why I feel the way that I do about
it. No, Kevin and you're Durant. You're not the only one that feels that way. Not to go down a complete rabbit hole here, but do you feel like Cleveland and LeBron winning the 2016 championship was actually the demise of LeBron winning finals?
I don't know. I don't, because I think that we are a year or two away from things getting a lot more interesting in Golden State than what they have been here the last several years. There's some dudes coming up that are not the marquee guys. Klay Thompson, obviously, I mean, okay. In the grand scheme of marquee guys, in the NBA, are they marquee players? Yes. But for the Golden State Warriors, you know, it's Steph and KD. Those are the top two. Now we get these second-tier guys who are going to be coming up on some contract years. Klay Thompson, Draymond Green.
Andre Iguodala.
He is a little bit different, obviously, because he's getting towards the tail end of his career. But Draymond and Klay are hitting, like, prime money-making time. There's going to be some decisions that have to be made in that front office of which one are they going to pay. You know, I don't think they're going to have the cap space to give them both the max, and both of them probably deserve it, you know. There's going to be some opportunities for unrest when there has not been very many opportunities for unrest in that organization over the last several years. Based on their track record, would I be surprised if they navigate it perfectly and come out of it completely unscathed and then they win like 7 NBA titles? No. But there's a lot more opportunity for the things to get a little more dicey in Golden State than they've been in the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying. I just think it's an interesting way to look at it that, you know, LeBron overcomes this all-time great team on the road when he's playing in Cleveland in 2016. And what happens, the second best player in the world goes and joins the 73-win team. Mm-hmm. Chances are if Golden State ends up winning that finals, I don't think Kevin Durant ends up on the Warriors just because.
Oh, I agree. Because I don't think that they're as worried about it.
Yeah.
You know? But this, what that actually said to me more than it said, I don't know how to put this. It worked in my mind. But what this said to me about Kevin Durant, he was not as worried about beating the Warriors as a team. That dude wants to beat LeBron. That's what it said to me when he went to Golden State, where he has forever been number two. You know, he was number two to Greg Oden. He was the number two recruit in the country. He was, finished second in the 2012 finals. He was done with – he's been to number two to LeBron the last, like, 7 or 8 years, like, ever since he really hit his prime, wins his first MVP, wins the scoring title. And I think he finally got tired of being number two, and he said, if I have an opportunity to go toe-to-toe with number one, he's going to do it. He's going to do it every year if that's what it takes.
Yeah.
And in the last 2 years, he's proven, like, hey, I'm still here.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, he might be the best player in the world for 82 games, but when it comes down to money time, I'm right here.
Yeah.
And he's done it 2 years in a row.
Yeah, which I would love to see LeBron on, you know, even just a comparable team to Golden State right now. You know, I mean, because LeBron at 33 years old had one of the best seasons he's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
He played some of the best basketball he has in his career, and it's just unfortunate that Cleveland team really wasn't that good.
Yeah. Oh, that's a lottery team without him.
Oh.
They don't make the playoffs.
Oh, well, I mean, we'll see it this year. You know? I'm not running Cleveland, but if I'm running Cleveland, the first thing I'm doing is I'm seeing what I can get for Kevin Love.
Yep.
I'm seeing if I can get a buyout with George Hill. I'm seeing
what can you get for Tristan Thompson?
I'm seeing what I can get for Tristan Thompson. I'll eat JR's 1 year. He's got 1 year left guaranteed. Probably try to trade Korver. You know, I'm just cleaning house, trying to get whatever I can get for those guys and trying to start the thing over, because I completely agree. Last year, you know, if you take LeBron off of that team, that's a for sure lottery team. That is not a good team at all.
Oh, yeah. And to me, it's like, are they going to build around Colin Sexton? Like, what are you going to do here? You know, they have – I don't see any – path. You say, okay, they're going to clean house. It's okay, then what do they do?
Yeah.
You know, who's going to be their guy that they build around? Or are they just like, all right, we're just going to have to hope that eventually we get someone in here, you know, that can change things.
And I think that one thing that it, you know, sure seems like people are kind of speculating and saying around the league is there was always friction with LeBron and Dan Gilbert, and it's always kind of been assumed that Dan Gilbert thinks he can build a contender without LeBron. We're going to see.
We've never seen it.
We have not. I mean, Cleveland.
They would have been okay. I mean, they were getting better. I mean, and as Kyrie was coming into
his own. They were getting better, but they would not have done anything at the level that they would have with LeBron.
No.
And they honestly, I mean, I believe they had 2 or 3 or 3 out of 4 number one picks They did not draft really well. I mean, I believe they had 3 out of 4 number one picks because they had
– And they got one guy that I think would be considered a hit as a number one overall type guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he didn't even stay.
Right.
And from, you know, to last out his years.
Exactly. So, you know, and if you don't get that number one pick overall for the Andrew Wiggins pick that you end up turning into Kevin Love because LeBron comes back, you know, you might not even get LeBron anyways.
Yeah.
Because – I mean, there was not much there at all.
Oh, they had no pieces. And they had nothing to trade outside of that number one pick.
Right. So, you know, like you said, they've never done it.
Yeah.
So, this is going to be a long rebuild anyways because just in terms of – which a lot of this is on LeBron, too, for signing one-year deals at a time. You know, 1 year with the player option, 1 year with the player option at a time. You know,
he kept things uncertain.
Right. They fully bought into him.
Yeah.
And they said, we are going to win right now because you're here. We're going to try to win. So
it's one of those things where you look at it just from the pure, like as the team, from their perspective, if you're going to sign a deal with the devil, you got to be ready to dance.
Yeah.
You know, and not saying LeBron is the devil, but I'm saying in that scenario where he's not doing things that are in the best interest of the franchise, you know, but if you want to go and get what signing that guy gives you, you know, going to the finals 4 years in a row, then you got to be willing to dance.
Yeah, which I think if they had the choice to do it again, they would definitely do the same thing all over again.
Yeah,
because to be able to sustain that level of success in any major sport, I mean, especially the NBA, is just very difficult. And, you know, when you've got the opportunity to do it, you have to do it. But I'm just very interested to see now, you know, LeBron is gone. He's not coming back to Cleveland. He delivered what he promised. He brought a championship back to Cleveland. And now it's, you know, are you going with Kobe Altman going forward as your GM? You know, LeBron was making a lot of decisions when he was there. You know, he brought in J.R. Smith. He wanted J.R. Smith. David Griffin came out and said he didn't want J.R. Smith. You know, he wanted Iman Shumpert, and LeBron said, bring him in. I'll take it. You know, I'll figure it out. And so they did it. You know, and now, I mean, it's just kind of one of those things where as great as LeBron is, they're also kind of landlocked because they're a fringe luxury tax team right now.
Yeah.
That is probably going to be one of the worst 5 or 6 teams in the NBA.
LeBron dug his own grave, Lair. I mean, in Cleveland. Really. He tied their hands with the Tristan Thompson thing. Basically held them hostage. He tied their hands with the J.R. Smith thing. I mean, there was all these different decisions that they made that you can look at and be like, okay, like what eventually happened with that team where they were nowhere near the Golden State Warriors? And I'm not saying that they would have been able to do anything that probably would have changed this because of what Golden State had done. But there were some moves that he made that just are kind of questionable.
Yeah.
You know, that where you're like, man.
And one of the big things.
Would you do that again?
And one of the big things with LeBron, which is all, you know, he's always been like this, which is very interesting now that he goes to LA, is LeBron's never wanted to play with younger players.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to play with rookies or guys that just got drafted. He wants guys that have produced at an NBA level, and he wants guys who are experienced. And that's one thing that has really hurt Cleveland now. Is where's the youth on that roster? Mm-hmm. There isn't any.
Yeah.
There is no young guys on that roster.
Shetty Osman. Yeah, Jeff Van Gundy's favorite player.
Yeah, you know, I mean, now you got, like, Jordan Clarkson. I mean...
And I think they're going to buy him out from what I was seeing yesterday.
Yeah, and in a sense, is LeBron a genius? Did he have this all planned going forward?
He was going to go to the finals and then sabotage the whole Dan
Gilbert. Trade deadline with the Lakers was a cap dump for the Lakers, and Cleveland sent the Lakers a first-round pick.
Yeah.
Was this a giant ploy by LeBron at the time?
You see what I'm saying, though? Him and Dan Gilbert have not liked each other. I mean, that's been very publicly known from all the way back to before he even left the first time.
Yeah, and after he left,
especially when
Dan Gilbert just, you know, ripped him.
The letter and all this stuff.
Yeah. That's why a lot of people were surprised that he came back was – you know, Dan Gilbert just completely trashed LeBron after he left.
And that's what I think. LeBron, and if we wanted to go, like, down the LeBron is an evil genius rabbit hole, like, and put on our tinfoil caps.
I'm headed there.
It's like he did everything to come in and right the perceived wrongs of what he had done to the city in the region, in his hometown, you know. But at the same time, he was doing everything to set them up to fail once Dan Gilbert was back in control. And that's because he didn't. And if you wanted to put a motive to it, it's like because he hated Dan Gilbert.
Yeah.
And that's completely fair, you know. All right. But all right, keeping this kind of back, getting this kind of back on track now that we've gone way down this this train. The basketball side of what the Lakers are doing so far from a roster moves, acquisition standpoint, I get it now more that I've been able to read more about this stuff, where they're talking. There was a quote from him like during the finals, I think June 7th, I think was the date, where he said something about how, you know, Cleveland didn't have enough guys who have been there and done that, and he wants guys on his team that are going to go out there and, you know, they might not have that same level of talent, but they're going to go out and compete their asses off every single night. And they've played in the big games, and they know what it's like under those big lights. So now you look at some of these dudes they brought in, Rajon Rondo. How many dudes out there have a playoff version of themselves?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been at his best in the playoffs his whole career.
And it's widely known and documented around the league that Rajon Rondo is one of the smartest basketball players in the league.
He's also one of the biggest dickheads in the league from everything that I've ever heard. I think he kind of – like, he can be a huge ass to some people and be a really nice guy to others.
Yeah.
From some stories I've heard.
You know, not to defend the guy, just kind of what, you know, I know and have heard about him. I just think he is the ultra competitor.
Yeah.
And
– see, and that's
I think that he watches – he watches so much film that he thinks he knows more than the coach. So that's why he doesn't get along with a lot of coaches, and he's hard to deal with. It's not due to he's just a complete head case.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy cares about basketball.
Right.
That's different, you know, than a guy like, you know, Nick Young, J.R. Smith.
Right.
Guys like that who are head cases that
are just,
you know,
crazy dudes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Rajon Rondo cares about basketball, and he wants to win, but he just doesn't come across the right way a lot of the time.
See, and it's almost like those guys who are those ultra-competitive dudes, you think about some of the other ones in the past, the Kobe Bryants, the Michael Jordans, they were so good that you could look past it. And Rondo has, like, never been good enough to where people could look past it.
Right.
You know? But then you look at even Lance Stephenson. Think of all the battles him and LeBron have had over the years.
Yeah.
And he's always been at his best when he's going at it with LeBron.
Yeah.
So if I'm LeBron, I'm looking at it, it's like, hell yeah, let's go get Lance Stephenson.
Yeah.
Like, man, we've had our beef, but, you know, let's team up. Let's do it.
It's,
you know,
just he's a very interesting situation to me, because if you just look at his career.
Lance Stephenson on Snapchat is one of the all-time great follows.
I'm going to have to follow him because I don't follow him.
Wears his own jersey, like, out around town.
I just remember he made that music video of that rap that he made. I don't know if you ever
Lance
saw that.
Lance Stephenson, man. He's something else.
But, no, go
And then JaVale, like, I mean, the same thing with
NBA champion.
Exactly. He's just got done playing in the finals. He's played in big games. He's been in that culture of being in Golden State, where maybe he can come in with some of these younger guys in Los Angeles and try and, you know, bring that culture along.
Right.
And that was something with Isaiah Thomas when he was in when they traded him to Los Angeles. And I think Luke Walton has talked a lot about this, that he was a huge impact on those guys, just being a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's going somewhere else. I don't remember exactly where.
I haven't seen anything on him unless it came out today.
He is a free agent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I saw that he was going to, like, Orlando or something like that. Yes, that's right, because I remember saw somebody making a joke about how he's not tall enough to get on the rides at Disney World.
is he going on a minimum?
I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
I'd have to look. I just saw that on Twitter, that they were talking about that stuff. But, I think that there is a method to the madness. And what I think is going to make this even a little bit more mad, we got some interesting news today that the Oklahoma City Thunder and Carmelo Anthony are going to part ways. Is this step one of the banana boat crew reuniting in Tinseltown, Hollywood?
It could be.
Carmelo and LeBron side by side. That's been the rumor for years guys wanted to play together, and now they might have an opportunity to do so.
Well, and especially,
if anybody's going to get Carmelo's head on straight, it's going to be LeBron.
Right, and especially, you know, with Carmelo reaching a buyout. I mean, that's going to mean after he reaches the buyout with Oklahoma City, more than likely he's going to be a minimum guy.
Yeah, because, I was going to say, he can take the veteran minimum.
Right, you know, which is, I think, like 3.5 something. I don't remember the exact number, but you know, it's not going to be anything towards a cap hit that's meaningful to the Lakers. And, you know, they could bring him in for a one-year deal and not jeopardize any cap space in 2019. So, yeah, you know, that's – I've heard Houston for him too, which would be interesting. Mm-hmm.
One of those teams could get him to be what he needs to be now in his career.
Yeah.
You know, being a spot-up shooter.
Yeah.
And a dude who's like your second line primary scorer or something like that.
Yeah, that's I think the biggest thing that's interesting with him is any of these teams going to convince him to be a guy that comes off the bench?
Yeah.
You know, kind of like a Dwayne Wade. You know, look at him going into Miami. He's still having he had a huge impact on that team last year, and he's a guy that bought in the, you know, coming off the bench, put his ego aside and said, "You know what? This is what I need to do at this point in my career." And it was clear that Carmelo, at this point in his career, told Oklahoma City, no, I am not doing that.
Yeah.
So if he reaches, you know, when they reach the buyout, which, you know, they will, because Oklahoma City's not going to have a $300 million payroll.
Yeah. For that team, at least.
Right. For that team. Are they going to be able to convince Carmelo to come off the bench and, you know, buy into a different role, something that he's never done before? Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of guys still on the board. You know, like we talked about on a previous podcast, Zach LaVine, restricted free agents, they normally play out a little bit longer, but there's only really three teams right now with significant cap space, and that hurts the market for a lot of guys. So that's why you saw a lot more role players coming off the board early, like Trevor Ariza, guys like that. You know, they're coming off the board a lot earlier this year compared to
it felt like this whole cycle was so much faster.
Yeah, normally, you know, the superstars are coming off the first, the second, third at the latest. And then after that, it's kind of the role guys shifting in to see where they can get their money and where the best fit is for them. But, you know, this year, it was just such a weird year because – all the teams that were just in such bad cap situations, you know, a lot of teams only had like the mid-level, you know, the taxpayers mid-level, stuff like that. You know, there just wasn't as much money there as there normally is.
Yeah.
So, you know, a guy like Zach LaVine is very interesting because if he goes out and gets an offer sheet for $20 million, he's not going to be a Chicago Bull. They're going to let him walk. You know, a guy
and
who played, you know, a guy who played half the season last year and, you know, he's always put up good numbers, but he always played on a bad Minnesota team. So he's kind of a guy, you know, that you're trying to get a gauge of what he really is. And the Bulls aren't going to sacrifice their long-term, you know, they're not going to commit $20 million a year to him. They want to keep it more into like, you know, the 12, 14, 16 range.
Right.
So, and another guy like Jabari Parker, you know, what's his market coming off of injury? And also just with all the teams that are cap restricted, you know, is he going to end up back in Milwaukee? Is he going to have to sign for less somewhere else and Milwaukee will let him walk? You know, free agency has just been completely different this year because
everybody crippled themselves 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these teams did by just being stupid.
Just by signing bad deals. And, you know, it's kind of like when you look at the market too, look at like the center market. The one team that was buying a center was Dallas. So when DeAndre Jordan went off the board to Dallas, when he opted out of his contract and went to Dallas, all these other, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, Clint Capella, all these other guys are like, you know, where's my money?
Right.
Jusuf Nurkic from
From Portland.
Yeah, or I mean, I'm sorry.
Jokic. Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, Nikola Jokic. Yeah, I always get them confused. Yeah,
well, they were on. Yeah, that's easy to get them confused. Yeah.
Right, just like, you know, just like him, he signed that long extension. You know, chances are he could have maybe waited it out, played, you know, his last year and gotten more money, but it's just not certain.
Yeah.
So he just took his money on a more team-friendly deal. So it's just been a very interesting dynamic in terms of free agency this year, and it's not something that has been like the past because – in basketball, the cap is just an estimate every year.
Yeah.
And it's not – it doesn't become official until
the day before free agency.
Right. So a lot of teams don't really know what they're going to – you know, they're assuming.
Really going to have to work with.
Right.
Yeah, you have an idea, but then, you know, you don't really know for definite.
Right. So that's why we're seeing a lot of these, you know, one-year balloon deals because teams aren't wanting to, you know, just completely throw away their cap flexibility going forward. So that's why you've got guys – like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope last year, J.J. Redick last year, a lot of these guys getting these one-year ballooned-up deals just so teams aren't sacrificing that long-term cap like they made the mistake of doing in the past.
All right, last thing I want to talk about, and then we need to be done. This has been a long Saturday podcast. The Golden State Warriors now have five All-Stars in their – will have five All-Stars in their starting lineup with the addition of DeMarcus Cousins on a mid-level exception deal for $5.3 million in 1 year. I am not mad at DeMarcus Cousins. I'm not mad at the Golden State Warriors. I'm mad at the other 29 teams in the NBA for allowing this to happen. From all reports, he had no offers, literally none. He reached out to Golden State to find out if they would want to take him on a mid-level exception because no one else wanted him. What are the other teams doing? I mean, there's teams out there that had money that could have given this guy a one-year deal to come in and for, I mean, think about Los Angeles. 1 year, bring him in. At least he keeps him away from Golden State. Now all of a sudden you give the best team in the world another, you know, one of probably the best 15 players in the game. And it's like, come on, you know. I know that he's been a bit of a cancer in the locker room in the past. I know that he's a guy who I don't think has ever been overly receptive to coaching. But if this, I mean, some gamesmanship. I feel like Golden State looked at this and they're like, crap, if we can get him, like, why would we let him go somewhere else? Yeah. You know, if he's willing to sign this deal, we might as well just take him.
Well, I mean, I think the thing for Golden State is there's literally no risk in this. You know, like you said, they're paying him the taxpayer's mid, I think, which is like 5.3.
Yeah, 5.3. 1 year.
Yeah, and you know.
And he probably won't play till January.
Right, and Golden State is under the luxury of obviously, you know, they can integrate him in. And he's got a chance to be around the team now, be around the locker room, and Steve Kerr can really sit him down and be like, hey.
And we've seen it work before where they get these guys who have been, you know, a little unruly in the past.
Right.
Nick Young, I mean, JaVale McGee. Like you get them to buy into that culture, and all of a sudden their career looks to start trending upwards a little bit.
Right. And I think this is a, you know, a huge bonus for the Warriors because now they've got, you know, before Boogie even plays a game, Steve Kerr will be able to sit him down and be like, hey, here's what your role is going to be. You know, you're not going to be our number one guy. You know, you've pretty much always been the number one or number two. You're not going to be number two.
Yeah.
So
he might not be number four.
Right. You know, this is what your role is going to be.
Yeah.
And this is what we want from you. And it's going to be up to him to buy into that role. And I just think, I mean, it's just a brilliant move for the Warriors because there's literally nothing that they have to lose. I mean, Boogie is obviously betting on himself, going there, you know, showing, yeah, I can buy into a role here and I can contribute to winning. Because if he goes out there and he shows that he's healthy, I mean, he's arguably the best center in the league.
Oh, yeah. They basically have the Western Conference NBA All-Stars from 2016.
Yeah. And, you know, for a guy like him, he's betting on himself to get him another big contract to show that I'm healthy from the Achilles and, you know, to get a big deal. So, to be honest, I don't know how another team didn't look at him.
I more look at it and I'm just kind of annoyed because it's like, man, like, what are all these other teams thinking?
Yeah, I mean,
And I know there's more risk for it for everyone else than there is for Golden State.
Right.
But at some point, when you look at a guy who's been a top 15, 20, at some point, probably even the top 10 player in the NBA, I don't know if he's ever been like a first-team All-NBA guy. Man, it's worth the risk.
Yeah, especially for, you know, like the mid-level. Obviously, you know, so Golden State has the taxpayer's mid, which is 5.3, mm-hmm. which obviously teams in the luxury tax, you know, pay. Like any other team that's not in the tax, they just have the mid-level, which is 8.
I would say it's like 7 or 8.
7 or 8, yeah. So, you know, I'm not sure what all those other teams had available for like their mid-level, but you know, if a team had that available, like, he's worth the risk for that.
Yeah.
You know, $8 million, you know, just sign him for 1 year. And I think, honestly, a lot of it has to be just we don't want him around our locker room.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I think that's, in Sacramento, he was always the guy, and He never got along with the coaches out there.
Except for Mike Malone. That was the only coach that he got along with.
I mean, he was very good, but he was just, you know, known as a head case.
Yeah.
And, you know.
He got better in New Orleans.
He was better in New Orleans. And, you know.
But he's a guy, too, that from all accounts, all the players love him.
Yeah.
Like, he's a – all of them love him.
Right.
You know. So, it's like if you are Golden State and you can bring this guy in that is so talented, you know that your players are going to like him. Why not?
Yeah.
You know?
No, I mean, it's a no-brainer in my mind for Golden State. And you can't blame them for what they did.
No.
I mean, they took advantage of it. And
it's like I said, I'm blaming all 29.
Yeah.
All other 29.
I mean, it's on paper, it's a great situation for him because they can, you know, they can take his time. Like a lot of other teams, especially like fringe playoff teams that were looking to sign him, they're like, okay, we need you back as soon as you can get back.
Yeah.
With Golden State,
take your time.
Hey, take your time.
Be in shape for the playoffs.
Be in shape. Get healthy. We'll slow, you know. And that's another thing for him that is going to be a lot different is, you know, Steve Kerr might go up to him and be like, hey, you're only going to play like 18 minutes tonight. And what other team in the league could really do that to him?
Right.
You know, just with Golden State and how successful they've been, they have all the leverage in this situation. And, you know, the upside is you get arguably the best center in the league, NBA All-Star, and you're adding him to an already incredible
team. That's the ceiling.
Team.
Yeah, that's
and
the ceiling.
The worst case is, you know,
put him on the bench and you let his
put
contract
him on the
run out.
Right, yeah. Exactly. So that's a pretty good risk-reward scenario right there for them.
All
right,
man. I know we could talk for hours about all of this kind of stuff. We've barely even scratched the surface of everything that has happened over the last several weeks. But I think we've already eclipsed the record for the longest Saturday podcast of all time. So
hey, people are working hard on Saturdays.
Hey.
Hopefully they stayed tuned after the Brock commitment
announced.
And
yeah, I'm sure they did.
Weren't celebrating too hard.
All right, man. Thanks. We'll have you on again here soon. Thanks again to Iowa Pork for being the presenting sponsor of the Cyclone Fanatic Saturday podcast. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Be safe out there and peace.